Welcome to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winchell. How are you, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Awesome. So plenty to talk about today. Big week for Tesla. We had a ton of Tesla news this week. The biggest one was our post about the performance of the Model 3 in cold weather. And when I say performance, I don't mean driving performance. I mean the way that the car is holding up after staying outside in the cold for a while. So early this week, I was getting a ton of reports from, especially from people in Quebec. We had the wave of cold, though not just in Quebec. I think it was pretty cold in New York too. Yeah, Seth, for you?
It was plenty cold. We got a foot of snow.
Yeah,
but not when you wrote the article. It was just cold.
Yeah, right now everyone in the Northeast is getting a lot of snow. But earlier this week there was no snow, but it was colder than it is right now. When I wrote that article, it was about -7 Celsius, so that's 20 Fahrenheit, I think. Not really good at that. So I was getting a bunch of reports, especially from Model 3 owners in Quebec, about having issues with the door handles, having issues with the windows, because, as you know, it's a frameless, the Model 3 has a frameless windows, so it needs to go down a little bit in order to open the door. And so if your windows are not going down, you're going to have some issue opening and closing the door. And some people that also issue just straight up opening the door handle because it's embedded inside the car, so you need, you know, to press on one side in order for it to open. So when I was reading all those reports, I just thought, well, I'm in Quebec too, and my car is sitting right outside, and I haven't used it all day, so it's a great opportunity to, because when something like that happens, like it happens and you're not filming it, you're just trying to solve the issue right now. So I thought it was a good opportunity to film it if I had the same issue. So I just took out my phone, went to the car and checked myself, and sure enough, I had the exact same issue. The only issue I didn't have was the charge port. A lot of people were complaining about having some issues with the charge port. I didn't have any for this, but I had the hardest time opening just having my door handle to pop out of the car. I was forcing, I wasn't even leaning into it and nothing would happen. Then I went to one of the driver's side by the back, and this one opened a lot easier, but still had to put some pressure, and I saw it was like frozen from the inside. So there was ice forming behind the handle, which is weird because it's completely enclosed. And the window wasn't going down once the handle popped out, which means that you're gonna have again trouble opening the door. Then I went back to the front windows, to the front door, and forced even more, not knowing that there was some ice probably accumulated behind the door handle, and it eventually popped out. Same problem with the windows though; it did come out a little bit, enough for me to be able to open and close the door while though forcing a little bit on the trim, which is not good. And when I say just a little, it's very much just a little, and they wouldn't move after that. All my windows wouldn't work, even though I was when I first tried, I was preheating the car for about 10 minutes, but after that I took the car, I drove around, so about 20 minutes of having heat in the car, and I still had the issues with my windows, so that's not good. And a bunch of people reported very similar problems.
Yeah, a lot of the window problems is due to the frameless window where it comes down. There's some other cars like Mercedes that have the same design. And it, you know, in cold weather, that's just typical. It happens quite a bit. We had our Model X parked at an airport for 7 days, and we got back, and it was like, it was just frozen solid. Like, the doors went open, and the windows, you know, the window didn't go down. It was stuck. So we had to preheat the car externally. And if we didn't have that option, I'm not sure what we would have done.
The app is basically, in the winter, it's an essential. It's not like a luxury. It becomes a necessity, really.
Yeah. You know, I would imagine a lot of people, we put ours in the garage when we can. But, you know, like, if it's not in the garage, it's going to be out in the cold, and it gets really cold around here. So
Yeah, no one is popping from one garage to another. So even though if you have a garage, because those comments were pissing me off. Like people, you have a $100,000 car, why you don't have a garage for it? I mean, even if you have a garage, at some point your car is going to be parked outside when you are like not at home for some reason. So I don't like those comments. But
yeah, it's annoying.
But yeah, the other thing, so you were mentioning with the Model X, I had my Model S, which also has frameless windows, last winter outside, same situation all the time. And because a lot of people were saying, like, that's not an issue specific to Model 3, it's an issue with every car that has frameless window and everything. And yeah, it is an issue with a car with frameless windows, but it seems to be more evident with the Model 3, because never had that much issue with my Model S. Certainly not with the door handles. Though the door handles, of course, are would you say robotized? Like they are, like there's a mechanism that opens themselves. You don't have to press on it. So that helps, because if there was glass around it, the mechanism was just strong enough to just push it off. And
right.
Did you ever have any issue with that? Like the door's handle never pulling, or was just the windows for the Model X?
I had an issue early on with my Model S with the door handle opening, but it wasn't related to cold.
Okay. I also had an issue with the Model S at one point. I had one door handle that I had to replace, but it wasn't because of that. And so, yeah, never a problem with that. And never a problem with actual windows. I mean, I did preheat the car. A bunch of people complained about my video saying that I just preheat the car for about 10 minutes. But at minus 7, 10 minutes normally is plenty. Like, I would do between 10 and 20 minutes, depending on how cold it was outside. Minus 7 is just not that cold. That's why it's worrying, the issue with the Model 3 right now, because what
minus 7 Celsius is not that cold. Minus 7 Fahrenheit's a little chilly.
Did I say Fahrenheit?
No. I think I don't know what people are assuming.
Oh, yeah. I should make it precise. Yeah. Minus 7 Celsius, it's not that cold. It gets much colder. It's going to get much colder pretty soon. So I think there's a reason to be worried about the capacity in the car. What Tesla is saying right now, because we reached out to Tesla about it, and they said for the windows, they said just preheat the car longer. I mean, which is fair, but it's not like it's not really convenient, because if I have to preheat the car now for 20, 30 minutes just at minus 7, how long is that going to be when it's going to be minus 20, minus 25 and such? So that's weird. They don't have a solution for the door handles right now, though preheating the car more should also have an impact, but it looks like it wouldn't be as significant, because it's embedded inside the door. It's not like the windows have a direct contact with the interior of the cabin, which you can eat up fairly quickly.
What about the silicone spray? I thought that was like the recommended course of action.
Yeah, a bunch of people recommended that. I ordered one. Not a spray that I ordered. I didn't see the spray, that wasn't recommended for that, but people were using some kind of tube with a rub on the top of it. That you can just rub, but that mainly seemed to be for rubber, though. They say it works for rubber, so it would work on the sill of the window. If it's really where the issue is, if it's stucking on the actual sill and not inside the mechanism of the system, because it's also inside where you have a problem with the door handle. So I don't really know. Oh, we're going to try it. We're going to see if it has an impact next time it gets that cold.
I mean, it's the hinge right there, because you are having trouble pushing the door handle. So it, I don't think it's too mechanical. It seems like it's just the hinge. Right? Or no?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just the hinge, because when I finally been able to pop up the door handle, there was ice forming all along the handle, so not just at the hinge. So maybe it was directly frozen. So that's why a bunch of people said, oh, it's because you had your car clean like recently, so there was some water behind it. That's not true. I haven't get the car clean in like a month, so it's definitely not that. But looks like there's some condensation that formed behind the handle, and it froze. Maybe the hinge froze was the problem, but it looks like it also froze all the way on the whole handle. So if that was frozen too, then since the lever of it, like you just have you press the pressure so close to the hinge that you don't have a lot of leverage on it. So if all the other side, which has much more leverage, is frozen, of course it's a lot more difficult on the to open. So I don't know. It's either that. If I can apply rub there, I'm going to, the silicone rub, I'm going to do it through because it should also, well, I'm not sure how the water got there. Like if it was condensation, would it still like move, slide down off of the enclosure before it froze? I really don't know.
How's your car handling otherwise? You know, this is the first time we've had the Model 3 in the winter year. Is it, you know, obviously mileage goes down. You know, is performance, you got the performance car. Is it, does the performance go down at all? Do you notice anything like that?
Well, I got the know the regen limitation thing that you get when it's very cold. Right. So that was the first thing. I didn't take the car on a long enough route to really see a big difference on the efficiency. It was clearly up. The consumption was clearly up, like to 300 watt hour. But is it because of the efficiency of the powertrain, the cold, or is it because of I was using a lot of heat with the climate system just because of the cold outside, and also to pre the car? So the efficiency, of course, went down. As for the handling performance, I couldn't tell you much because when I took the car earlier this week, there weren't any snow or anything, any ice on the ground. I started snowing last night or today or during the night, and I haven't taken the car out yet.
And you got winter tires?
Yeah, I don't have my winter tires yet. I mean, this is a pretty good snowstorm for November. I mean, we're still mid-November right now. By law, you only have to have, I think it's December 15th, that you need to have your winter tires, I think. Is it the same in New York?
We don't have laws about winter tires.
Oh, no, you don't have that? Oh. Yeah, you should still get some winter tires. If you have snow, people, I've seen a bunch of comments on the forums on Reddit and such about people talking about the multi-performance in the snow and complaining. And, of course, the first question people are like, what kind of tires do you have? Oh, I still have the all-season tire that Tesla.
Yeah, all seasons are the worst name for tires. Yeah. Like, they're not all-season.
No, they're winter tire. But they're summer tire. But even then, they're not also optimized for the summer either. So they just...
Yeah, they're just middle-of-the-road tires. Yeah.
So,
you know, I have a Chevy Bolt, and I got in it the other day. And the mileage, I think, you know, it usually comes in... I drive it a little hard, so... I usually have a guesstimate of around 200, 220, something like that when it's full. And I got in and it was like 135 or something.
No.
Because when it gets cold and I'm still driving it hard, it like just goes way, way down. I know Tesla doesn't really change the official mile, you know, the what it shows you on the battery for cold, but...
doesn't do it after a while though. If you keep driving with that efficiency for a while, I think it updates after that. Like the first few times, maybe not, but you're gonna see the impact over time if it stays cold. I think.
Yeah, I feel it's a little bit optimistic though. Optimistic than the Bolt. The Bolt kind of like takes the temperature into consideration, and the Bolt will even come up and say like, you know, you don't have Tesla does this too actually. You don't have regen because it's cold or, you know, whatever. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's a different, like, driving an electric car in the winter is a totally different experience. There's just a lot of little nuances that kind of change it. It's not hard or, you know, it doesn't change my mind about driving electric by any stretch. But it's just something you got to get used to.
Yeah, it's going to be the first electric summer winter for a bunch of people, too, with the Model 3 because of... like technically the Model 3 saw a winter before last year, but there was only like a handful of people that had a car back then, mainly in California too. So now, I mean, we have a ton of them in Quebec, we have a ton of them in Ontario where it gets also pretty cold, a bunch in the Northeast in the US. So yeah, I think we're gonna see a bunch of people like having some kind of reckoning, like, oh, okay, yeah, it's not the range goes down definitely. And well, winter tire doesn't have anything to do with the fact that it's electric. You should have winter tire if you get some decent snow. We're going to follow up on that. Go ahead.
No, supposedly Tesla tested the Model 3 in Alaska. You remember they had that tweet or something.
Yeah, but that was like way after the car was in production. You already had your car when they did that. So
yeah, but I mean, you know, they should know about any weird issues with doors not opening or windows if they've, you know, properly tested it in Alaska.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that because I feel like when they say, oh, we did the winter testing, I feel like they're probably focused on like the actual driving performance, the handling, the dynamics of driving in a cold weather, maybe the efficiency. Maybe they haven't thought of like just leave the car outside in the cold for a night and try to open it the next morning, or like did they put it in the garage after the test, or day of testing and things like that. I don't know, I'm speculating right now. Maybe they did, but like it wasn't just me having issues. It was like literally dozens of reports on social media, on Electrek, on Facebook, on Reddit.
Yeah.
And then when I read that, I go to my car and I have the exact same problem. So I mean, it's not a scientific survey or anything, but it looks like it's pretty widespread, really.
Yeah, and so Matt is mentioning in the comments also that there's some supercharging slowness when it's super cold.
Oh, for sure.
If your batteries come in warm or hot, you're usually in pretty good shape. It'll start off slow because when you plug into the supercharger, it actually spends a lot of energy heating up the battery. But those first couple minutes, you're not going to get like the full charge. And actually, we just got back from Ohio, you know, with the stops we made, where it was actually snowing in Pennsylvania, so we experienced that firsthand. But you know, this has been, I've had the Model X for a few years, and we go to Vermont quite often, so we're pretty used to it. What's actually even worse though is if you go to a CHAdeMO, and we have a CHAdeMO adapter. The CHAdeMO does not heat up the battery. So if you go from like a hotel where your car is parked outside to a CHAdeMO station, your CHAdeMO charge is going to be like level 2 the whole way through. So you got to heat up the battery first and then go to a CHAdeMO station.
Could you still go in your app and sort of activate the battery preconditioning as
while
you plug the CHAdeMO?
While it's charging, yes, but not before.
Oh, and yeah, right. You need to be charging while it's... So what do you mean? Like you could plug the CHAdeMO and then you'd go to your app and you activate the climate control and activate preconditioning the battery pack? Because why wouldn't it do it itself? That's stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess just CHAdeMO's not programmed to be, you know, to think about that when it's charging that way.
Yeah.
Or it might have been just a station. I don't know. But I had this issue and it was really frustrating because, you know, it was charging at level 2 speed and I was stuck in the cold for 2 hours.
Yeah, it's not ideal. Yeah, we're going to follow up on this Model 3 in the cold thing because, I think there's going to be some things that Tesla can do to improve the situation, and we're going to come up with some tips, and maybe like if that silicon thing works, I'm going to try a few other things too and come back to you with what was the best solution. But you were speaking about the CHAdeMO adapter. I mean, there's another adapter that was announced this week that's pretty exciting for the Model 3, and that's the CCS. So Tesla finally confirmed this week, and I don't know why it took so long to confirm it. Like, I thought it was like a last minute thing because we've been asking about that like for a long time. Like, what's going to be the plug in Europe? And sure enough, it's the CCS plug that's coming to the European market for the Model 3. Model S and X are going to get adapters, so you're gonna have a Type 2, like a Tesla's Type 2 Mini-Key plug to a CCS plug, and they're gonna also retrofit the current superchargers in Europe to have dual cables with the current ones and the new CCS one. And presumably the new supercharger that's going to come up are going to be just CCS because all the Model 3s are going to be compatible with CCS and all the Model S and X are going to have the adapter. That's my understanding right now.
Yeah, it's surprising that they're going to put a new cable in there rather than just put an adapter. Like, you know how they have those USB things with like a lightning adapter on the
tip?
Like a
dongle, like a dongle thing?
Yeah, like dongle world. This is for me. This is like the biggest news of probably the last couple of months. the fact that Tesla and the Model 3 are going to CCS kind of means that that's the new standard in my eyes anyway.
For everything.
And certainly in Europe. And I think that's kind of, you know, I think that's kind of been the idea, is like to get one standard. Mm-hmm. Which I think is good for everyone, although like looking at the CCS combo, it's not an elegant thing. And to me, this is kind of like Betamax versus VHS, where Betamax was clearly the better technology. It was smaller, better quality. I think it was even cheaper to make, but, you know, it was Sony's, and VHS did the political thing, and they got everybody else involved. So we got the bigger tapes and the worse quality. I think it's the same thing here with CCS. Like, they went out, they got all the European and all the American car manufacturers to use their standard for fast charging, and even Kia is CHAdeMO, but Hyundai is CCS.
For which car?
So for the Ioniq and the Kona, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Which is weird, because, you know, Japan's right there, and they're big in CHAdeMO, and Kia uses CHAdeMO, I believe. So it's kind of a weird, like, which standard are you going to use?
Yeah, we're sort of in between time right now. It's still a transition, but everything points to CCS winning over, basically, especially now with the Model 3, because the Model 3 is such a big vehicle program. In terms of production rate right now, in terms of sales, it's the fastest growing one. So if the fastest growing EV has a CCS standard, and most other automakers are also moving to the CCS standard, then, I mean, it looks like CCS is going to be in everything now. Even though Tesla is not doing it in the US yet, Model S and X haven't really announced. Like, an adapter is still not, the main plug remains the Type 2 for Tesla if they're using an adapter. So it looks like a tentative move, commitment to CCS from Tesla.
Right. It would be surprising if they didn't move to CCS in the U.S. as well. And, you know, this is kind of why Tesla made such a big spot for charging on the Model 3, which we kind of, you know, we guessed that there was going to be, you know, for China as well, they have to have two spots for the Tesla adapter and then the local Chinese one.
Yeah, it's not sure what they're going to do for the Chinese market in this run, because right now for Model S and X, they are doing, like, not even dual plug, they are doing, like, dual charge port, too. Like, they have the same, right, like, regular charge port, and then inside the rear headlights, the rear lights, and they have, right, a second one, like, a usual, like, gas tank type of thing.
Right.
Which is really weird. So, yeah, you'd think that there's enough space on the Model 3 charge port that you could put both plugs on it. Or maybe just put the Chinese standard one, because now you need the Chinese standard, because...
Yeah, maybe they'll just go straight Chinese.
Because the Chinese standard, they have been working with CHAdeMO, and they have like a protocol, a path to go to 250 kilowatts charging, so it's not going to be limited, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, different continents still have different, you know, AC plugs, so it's not... Once you've got one standard on the continent, you're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if China and Europe and the U.S. have different plugs, I don't think it's that big a deal. Something else, though, is, you know, we can speculate a little bit. Like, you know, Tesla's coming out with higher-powered V3 superchargers. Like, will those actually be CCS combo now? One of the things, if you look at the CCS combo, is the DC charge ports are quite large, meaning that, you know, there's a bigger gauge of wire so that it can take more amps. So maybe that's, instead of, you know, Tesla was supposed to come out with the V3 supercharger already this year, I thought.
This summer, and then I think they updated the timeline to end of the year,
which is rapidly approaching.
Yeah.
So it might mean that Tesla's V3 is, you know, CCS combo. To me, that wouldn't be a horrible thing. I think it would be good for the general EV community. But that also may mean that it can go up to 350 kilowatts, or, you know, something something higher than current, you know, and it would be good for other car makers, because theoretically, if Tesla superchargers had CCS combo, then any other car, including a Chevy Bolt, could just roll into a supercharger and plug in.
Yeah, that's the other big piece of speculation right now, because since Tesla is not only introducing a CCS combo plug on the Model 3 in Europe, it's also retrofitting the existing supercharger network with the cables. It opens up the fact that other automakers could use a supercharger network, because before they would have to either use an adapter for the supercharger, which would have been expensive, would have been generally troublesome for the customers, or they would have to directly use Tesla's plug, which was even less likely, really, that another automaker would adapt this plug. But now that it's going to be straight a dual plug on the supercharger station, then it's a lot easier. Though I still don't see it happening, really, for some reason. I mean, especially in Europe now with the IoT network, yeah, Fastnet, you have a bunch of growing networks. Not Fastnet, but the other ones are directly, automakers are directly involved in them. So I think they're going
to. Maybe it's a point where, you know, Tesla can make some money. You know, when you're driving your BMW, and you know you want to get a charge, you go to the Tesla supercharger, you plug in, and now you're stuck around a bunch of Tesla guys talking about Teslas, and you have to go into the Tesla lounge and you learn about Teslas, and maybe it's a good way to get some more customers. You know, thinking in the long run.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to see it like, well, I don't think the problem is going to be Tesla in order to share the network. Tesla, I'm sure Tesla sees plenty of advantage of doing that, but I think it's more like BMW, which is invested in Ionity. I think they're going to see it more like, let's just, instead of paying Tesla money to access our network, let's just put more money in Ionity and see it grow more, and people use it, even though they're still going to charge for it. So,
Well, Tesla, I mean, you could... So the CCS combo, I think you know this, but the CCS combo has like a little handshake, and each car has its own identifier. So what you can actually do is put your credit card on an identifier, and that's what, you know, these other networks do, like EVgo, for instance, or
ChargePoint.
What is the other ones? ChargePoint and Green Lots and all these others that are in the U.S. So Tesla could say, hey, look, get an account, give us your, you know, find some way to get the car's identifier, and then just tie your car, you know, your BMW or your Chevy Bolt, to your identifier, and then put it on your credit card, and maybe, you know, maybe they charge you the Tesla like $100 a year rate or something just to register you, and then you can, with your Chevy Bolt, roll up to any Tesla supercharger. And there, you know, if you look in the U.S. right now, you know, the what is that America thing, the Charge America or whatever. I don't
Electrify,
know. Whatever it's called.
Electrify America.
Electrify America, right. There is no, I mean, there are almost no stations. And
yeah, but
and
they're coming up fast, though. Like, they are. Like,
they're not coming up fast. They're I would say, 4 or 5 years behind Tesla.
Oh, right. That's where you're going to be careful. I mean, at Tesla's rate of deployment, they are definitely maybe even more than 4 or 5 years. Like, whatever Tesla was basically in 2013 when they introduced the system. So, yeah, probably like a good 5 years. But Tesla didn't have $2 billion to put into the network back then. Electrify America has $2 billion to put in the system back then. So they were growing a lot faster. Like, I think they already have their 400 sites already locked up. So it's more about like making, and they have four different, so Tesla makes all their own supercharger themselves. So at one point, when they were like fully deployed, like as fast as possible, it wasn't even the logistic of getting the supercharger hub that was the bottleneck. It was actually the production at one point. They weren't just making enough of them. They don't have as much of a problem in Electrify America because they split everything into four different manufacturers. So they and if someone like is not manufacturing enough, then you give the station to another one that's more capacity. So I think they're going to come up like real fast.
I think they're probably going to come up faster than Tesla, but I still think they're years behind.
Maybe like 2 years behind, like max.
And if you look at their stations, they're not, I mean, Tesla has 40, you know, 8 to 40 on their 40 charging spots per station.
Yeah.
Electrify America, a lot of their stations are 2, 4, 6, 8. You know, some of them are bigger, but like
I think now they're going like for all of them they've been at least 6 or 8 now. So that's not as bad, but for sure, yeah, Tesla has the advantage there where they're not shy about deploying like 12, 16,
right,
even like 40 for a few of them, like you said. Though there's just a handful of
those. So my thing is like if you're buying a car now, like if you're buying a Chevy Bolt and you want to be able to drive anywhere you want, you cannot rely on Electrify America or Green Lots or, I mean, the PR guy who used to work for Chevy, you know, told me he couldn't even own a Bolt. I mean, not that he would want one. He was kind of a truck guy, I guess. But he said he couldn't own a Bolt because he has to go visit his parents in Chicago, and he couldn't get from Detroit to Chicago. And you still can't do that, which is crazy. Like, all these people from Detroit who theoretically could have a Bolt can't drive to Chicago because there's no fast charging between Detroit and Chicago. And, you know, maybe Electrify America will put something there. But, like, when it's the interest of the Electrify America or ChargePoint or Green Lots or, you know, whatever third-party entity, and it's not the interest of the car manufacturer, the drivers, then all of a sudden the superchargers end up in urban areas and places with quite a lot of population and not in the middle of nowhere but in between two cities.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of little nuances to Tesla's supercharger network that are not being duplicated by any of the manufacturers and certainly not Electrify America. So I think if you're a Chevy, BMW, anybody else, Nissan, and you're saying, oh, don't worry, we're going to be like Tesla in a couple years. Electrify America is going to have it covered. I think that's going to be a rude awakening for you.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a point there for sure. But I think I'm more optimistic than you when it comes to Electrify America, though. I think they're going to, because they are a third-party network officially, so they could have the same issues that you just mentioned. But at the same time, they are very much like a subsidiary of VW, and they want to be able to do what Supercharger did for Tesla to Volkswagen, to not just like the VW, but the Audi H1, which is coming and everything. So, like next year, I think you're going to see like hundreds of stations from Electrify America, and most of them are going to be like well placed for long distance travel, like you just mentioned, not just in the high population area. Because they don't need to turn a profit, or at least not right now. Anyway, let's move on. We've been talking about that for a while. That's something that happened right after we ended the last podcast. Like, it happened like the night between last Friday and Saturday. Tesla increased the base price of the Model S and X and made several option changes. All right, so what happened here? It's a bit confusing because, and I mean, that's not a norm for Tesla in terms of pricings and options. What they did is that they removed the textile interior, first of all. They made the all-black premium interior standard, and they increased the price, the base price of the 75D version of both the Model S and X, $78,000 and $84,000 respectively. And they decreased the price of the 100D versions, $96,000 and $99,000 for S and X respectively. In Europe, that resulted in a €1,500 increase for the base version, and the 100Ds stayed the same. So technically, the price went up, but if you wanted to have the all black interior, premium interior, then the value is cheaper because it was more expensive than the price increase. So, really, it's a good, it's a bad thing, really, depending on what you wanted of the Model S and X. A few different changes. Elon Musk warned of that a few weeks ago about the interior option being removed. So, a few of them are now gone. Now you just have the all black with ash and dark aligner. You still have the cream premium material with oak and light aligner. And you have, of course, the popular white premium, which come with the dark ash and dark headliner. And for the performance version, you have all black and all white, that's it. A bunch of other options went away. We're talking about the refreshing child seats.
Yeah, that's a bummer. That was like my favorite thing of the Model S. You know, clearly, like, you can get a Model X and you've got the same seating possibilities, but man, it was cool to have the rear facing seats for the Model S. You know, you got this really like hardcore performance large sedan, and you open the trunk and boom, there's your kit. And the rear facing, which is supposed to be safer, you know, I don't know how a rear end would do. Like, I wouldn't want to try that, but you know, supposedly Tesla double reinforced the bumper on those, so it was just cool, you know, like, it was cool to pull my kids out of there when they were young. It's sad to see it go, but I get it. It's probably not a very popular option.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, everything, like, I'm going to list everything else that's gone through real quick. Like, the 21 black wheels are gone. Panoramic.
Those are awesome.
The panoramic sunroof is gone.
Awesome.
72M charger for single phase markets are now moving to 48 amps. Yeah, that's it.
And then the carbon
fiber spoiler is gone. 6-seat with center console configuration for Model X is gone. But what we learned the next day is that everything is still available, but as off the menu item, whatever that means. I mean, it's not the first time we heard that from Tesla, that they remove things and they put in off the menu items. Previously, it was mainly sort of as a transitional period, but right now, based on the documentation we got from Tesla, it's like indefinitely. So they don't have a time. Like, you can, a month from now, you could technically still order it. I'm not sure if it's because the, for example, the refreshing seat that we just discussed, is it because they still have some in stock and they could install them, they just don't want to sell anymore, so they're just going to let the stock go over time without ordering anything more. I don't know, it's really unclear, but in that documentation, Tesla also said the reason behind those things was to simplify the product offering.
Yeah, I guess they want to put a high priority on making sure that people don't put off buying something because they are not sure if they want the child seats or the black arachnid wheels. They just want you to go right through that product thing and only have a couple options to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but at the same time, you look at other premium automakers, and Tesla already had the most simple like configurator out there, like the fewer options for sure. I mean,
well, you can't even buy other cars online. You have to go through a dealer, which
well,
is
some
like
of,
a
some
nightmare.
Of the premiums, well, you can still like custom order it, even though it's through the dealer. The order is going to go through a dealer at some point.
Right,
you can still custom order it online. But I don't know, man. It feels like they remove more value than they added with this thing.
Yeah, it's always curious, like why they make these decisions. Like, you try to get behind the psychology of it, and it's not easy to figure out. And they move things around so often, too. Like, you know, maybe the rear-facing child seats will be back in 2 months. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a thing, too, right? But in terms of, like, if it's still available off the menu, but it's just more difficult to know, like, even the pricing. Like, all you want to know the pricing now if it's on the website. So it forces you to go with two Tesla staffs and everything, which is not bad, but, I mean,
it's more work for them.
Yeah, and it goes again, I feel like, what Tesla was trying to do with the custom order-only thing. Though, as you know, too, like, custom order only is not really true for Tesla anymore. A lot of their sales now go through inventory cars. They just, since they have so few configurations, I mean, they can just make batches of them the same car, and they know that it's going to match like a certain percentage of the people that are going to order the car. So they send it to the right market right away, and then they match their custom order. So that's becoming like a standard thing. It always go with. With Elon, he's been pushing a narrative lately. I don't know if you've listened to the last few earnings calls, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's been talking about that for a while now, about time to order and delivery. Like, he says that time to order, basically on a capital expenditure kind of thing, like almost capital they have to spend in order for them to deliver the car, so they don't get the full check until the car is delivered. There is a long period of time. The longer the transit, the longer Tesla has to put the cash up front to build a car before they get a check. which is, of course, a bigger problem for Tesla than other automakers who go through dealership model where they can sell the car to the dealership in volume, and then the transit is shorter because they don't have to
wait. Yeah, the dealership actually buys the cars, right?
Yeah, basically, most of them. They have the different models, but I think the main one is this one. So it's all about, for Tesla right now, he's been talking about reducing that time. So, of course, that includes directly the transit time between the factory and the delivery to the customer, but it can also include like the time of ordering the car. If you don't have to custom order the car, because even if you custom order the car, it might still be already technically you custom order it, but the car might already be made because they just match it to an inventory car. So things like that are looks like they're becoming more common for Tesla.
Yeah, and if you have fewer options, that means more inventory cars aren't going to match up.
Easier, it's easier to match up.
Yeah.
Tesla launched a new enhanced anti-theft sensor as an aftermarket product. So that kind of came out of nowhere this week. It sounds like it's a new sensor that detects the motion inside the cabin and if something move or tilt, and then it activate the alarm inside the car. And it's sold as an aftermarket product, so you can buy it on Tesla's website right now for $350 for Model S and X. When we reported on it, there wasn't any option for Model 3 yet. But yeah, it sounds like it's in response of this little strings of theft that happened with the Model S and X in Europe, especially with the relay attacks lately. Tesla like came out with a bunch of update to response to that, including like the pin to drive thing. First of all, was the just removing the passive entry thing for the starter. But that was also, when doing that, you also remove the convenience of having passive entry. So that was like, you gain something, but you lose something. But now they have the optional pin to drive that adds something. They also recommended people to use the Faraday pouches to put your key fob in there so that people don't reach your signal that can boost it to the car. But now they also added that alarm system as an aftermarket product. Would you buy it for $350, Ed?
Nope. We haven't had any problems. I live in the middle of nowhere. Like, nobody could even find me, let alone...
find your car.
You know, find my car.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live in a pretty safe area, and when I go to places that aren't terribly safe, I obviously lock up. I get it for sure. Like, if I lived in the city, I would definitely get something like this. I don't know if I would get this though, because like I feel like once somebody's in your car, they've already probably broken your window and or got in somehow. So once they're in your car, it's kind of like whatever.
Make them panic. Basically, to make the alarm starts and make them panic.
Yeah.
But then if you're a car, if you have the drive, the pin to drive thing, then also they're going to be stuck there. They're not going to be able to drive their car if they don't know your pin.
Yeah.
So that's one more thing. And I even think that Tesla is starting to roll out a new update with that adds a pin not only to drive the car, but also to, or it's optional, it's one or the other or both, a pin to remove the remote tracking of the car. So that's the thing that the thief were doing. They were doing the relay attack and everything. They got the car, but once they ordered a car, so that the owner couldn't track them with the app, they would remove remote tracking from the system.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are smart.
Yeah.
Most of the car criminals in the U.S. aren't really that.
Yeah, a bunch of them were caught because of that. In Europe, for some reason, it looks like there's more sophisticated thieves that... They are organized and they have a little system. It's not just like they still need, they figure out what they do with it. They know already what they're going to do with it. They're going to dismantle the car within the same day and they're going to be on a boat or whatnot. So they know what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, when Elon tweeted out his, what features do you want for the model or what features do you want for your Tesla car? I thought it would be a good idea to use all the cameras, which in the Model 3 includes interior. As a mechanism for safety. So, like, anytime your car alarm would go off, you know, shoot pictures of what's happening in your car to your app so that you can see, hey, you know, somebody's trying to break in or some kid's, you know, keying your car, or, you know, whatever. And you know, this is like an internal thing. I wonder if this is something that's part of an upcoming Tesla kind of revamp of their security system. Like right now, it's an aftermarket item, but maybe it's going to be built in the future.
Well, he did say that they were going to do a parking feature. They're going to add a parking feature to the dash cam system. So that's not exactly what you just described, but it's like a first step in that direction. If the car is parked, something's happened, the cameras around the car are going to activate. But yeah, it's I see it happening for sure at some point. It just might not be a priority right now. And those kind of updates are probably easier to do. Yeah, another big news this week is that a bunch of American automakers and charging companies and a bunch of people basically in the EV space, they form a new coalition to try to reform the electric vehicle tax federal tax credit in the U.S. So we've been talking a lot about that recently, especially since Tesla hit the threshold earlier this year. There are two different bills right now that have been proposed. One that would eliminate the tax credit altogether. The other one would extend it, remove the cap, and extend it over a period of time instead of the 200,000 delivery limit, which most people have a brain can see that that's the right solution, because the cap is kind of a stupid system, because it penalizes early adopters, people that are investing in electric vehicles sooner than other companies. And in the U.S., that includes Tesla, GM, and Nissan. So sure enough, you find them on the list of people behind that coalition. And they are pushing for the removal of the cap, too. So we don't know what's going to happen, because that has to do with U.S. politics. And it's been an election recently, and we know now that Congress is now with the Democrats, which should be technically pro-EVs. Republican less so, and they still have the Senate. But the both of those bills were introduced by Republicans too. Though one of them, the one that introduced the bill that it's actually pro EV, has been he lost his election earlier.
Yeah, to a Democrat.
To a Democrat. So technically, Democrats should be more pro EV than him. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happens if like the senator proposes a bill, then he loses his election. Like, what happens to that bill? Can someone like claim it and sponsor it, or like how does it work?
I don't even know. It doesn't seem like anything's going to get done before January. I mean, it's now mid to late November. That's just not how our Congress works. I would expect that in January, the folks, I guess I could make it retroactive if they pass some bill in June or something. They could say, but
is there even
I wouldn't bank on it
right now? Like, with since the elections. Is there ever...
So what could likely happen, I believe, is that some bill would pass the House because it's, Democrat-led. And, Ocasio-Cortez and a lot of the other incoming Democrats are very sustainable-minded. So I think that will get some sort of play. I think they are actually, probably going to push, like, a carbon tax or whatever. So that could actually get House approval, but the Senate is even more strongly Republican now than it was before. I think they gained two seats. So I think it's going to be extremely difficult for any kind of pro-EV or even just keeping this cap, this $7,500 thing. I think it's going to be close to impossible to keep it there. So I wouldn't expect... at least in the short term, anything to change. I think Tesla's going to run out in January, and GM's going to run out in the middle of next year, and not run out. They'll go down to 7,500, or sorry, 37.5, and then drop down in the middle of the year to 1,800. So long, TLDR status quo.
Yeah, for sure. So what it means, though, is that Tesla is even more incentivized to deliver more cars by the end of the year in order to allow for more of the customers to get that full credit, because it's going to be a $3,700 difference if they don't. And what Elon announced earlier this week is that they are making a push to enable more people to get their car by the end of the year in the U.S. by acquiring more trucking capacity. So
and if you're Elon Musk, how do you acquire more trucking capacity?
You buy some trucking companies, of course, and you take some major contracts with some other trucking companies. And that's what Elon did, or at least he said he did when announcing that on Twitter. Was yesterday, I think? Yep, yesterday. Yeah, so apparently last quarter, logistics was a big bottleneck. It wasn't as much as the production capacity for the Model 3, but the delivery capacity. So now with that a new trucking capacity that they acquired, they think they're going to be able to deliver more cars. But I think that production is also a big factor too. And as we reported like earlier this month, the Tesla still wasn't able really to maintain that 5,000 a week. Like they are able to get it a few times, but they are not really surpassing that since the 5,300 that they did the last week of the last quarter. Now we learned yesterday that they are pushing for 7,000 units per week within the next 2 weeks. So exactly by November 28th. So we obtained an email that Elon sent to employees. And in that email, he warned people that it was coming. He was walking the whole production line from cells to final assembly on the 27th and the 28th. And in that email, he told people that everyone, by the 28th, every subsystem in the military production needs to be able to produce 50-plus units per hour, because he said that that's what you need to be able to do in order to be $1,000 units per day, which means 7,000 Model 3s per week, which would be a big upgrade from what they're doing right now. So I think when they send that email, a lot of people got some cold sweats in their back when reading that. Oh, Elon's going to be on the line in 2 weeks. And that email, though, to be fair, you know, the purpose of that email was to anyone on the production floor, if they see some potential issues right now that could lead to them not being able to achieve that 50 units per hour by the 28th, to inform him right now of that potential issue so he can put some resources into fixing it there. Because by the 28th, when he's walking the line, that's pretty much like just last minute verification, and everything should be ready to do 7,000 per week. So that should be pretty exciting, because that would be a whole month at 7,000 per week in December, and new trucking capacity, so Tesla could deliver like a lot of Model 3s by the end of the year. Alright, we're going to run through a few quick updates. Handed the free charging critic program for the Model S and X. So not a lot of people were on that program, because for the longest time the free supercharging with the referral program was on for Model S and X. But over the last that sort of phased out over the last few months. But when you were on the paid program for the supercharger, you were still getting 400 kilowatt hour credit per year annually, which I think is pretty good. I don't think I use more than 400 kilowatt hour in a year of supercharging. So it's basically still it's free supercharging when you're under that program, unless you're like a power user of the supercharger network. But that's gone as November 2nd, Tesla updated the support page for the supercharger. So after November 2nd, you don't receive that anymore. So if you're the paid program, you are like the Model 3 before, like the 6, if you just bought the car, of course you have the 6-month thing with the referral program again. But if not, you pay for every use, and that's back on from Model S and X. Oh, we just reported that this morning. Big news, 10 billion miles. That's the total of the Tesla fleet around the world. That's the total mileage that they achieve. And at the same time this week, well, just a day before achieving that, we also, sources told us that they achieve a global fleet of 500,000 car, which is awesome.
Yeah, that is actually a big milestone. That's half a million EVs on the road.
Just Teslas. Yeah, and those 10 billion miles too, because that's 10 billion electric miles that would have been powered by gas if it wasn't for those cars.
Right.
And depending on where you get that electricity, it might be some clean mileage. I mean, I know that I contributed a few thousand miles to those, and my knowledge was fairly clean because it was mostly from hydroelectricity.
Hydro, right? Yep.
Do you know where your electricity comes from? Do you have like a
pretty good idea? Yeah, it's actually a lot of it comes from you.
Right. Hydro Quebec sells a lot to New York, so that's right.
I mean, if we're being realistic about it, where my electrons are coming from, there's a nuclear power plant about 10 miles away from me.
Which is also clean too, depending on how you manage to.
As long as it doesn't blow up, it's clean.
And there's also some there's some residue. There's some like that they have to get rid of, right? And then
we're trying not to think about that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's some ways to get rid of it, like that's not harming your environment, but I'm curious in long term what the situation. Update on Tesla Energy too this week. They slashed the prices on the solar system by up 20%, citing vertical integration. So they say that they changed the whole pricing structure in terms of the solar modules. So that's not the solar roof tiles. It's really the solar modules at Tesla, the system that are basically retrofits when they retrofit the roof with modules, not when they redo it with tiles. But that's an expensive thing. Like most system costs easily like $15,000-$20,000 for like a base system, and it can easily go up to $30,000-$40,000 depending on what's your electricity use. So they said that it's going to be between $3,000-$5,000 price cut for the average customers, and the bigger the system, the bigger the price cut. They say that's going to be up to 20% less expensive. And they are citing vertical integration, like I said. It's more specifically things like cutting a bunch of cell channels. So if you guys remember the SolarCity days, SolarCity would be big on like door-to-door salesmen, call center things. They'd be pretty pushy to get the cells done and everything. Tesla is cutting down on that, and instead using the existing retail network that they have for their cars. So all the Tesla stores out there are now selling the products, and they're also using their existing customer base of vehicle customers and trying to sell them solar, because normally electric vehicle owners are more they invest in solar at a higher rate than the regular homeowners because they use more electricity, of course, and they are more sort of conscientious about how they power their car.
Right, and there's a lot more owners coming online because of the Model 3.
Yeah, that too.
So there's a lot more of a customer base to do business with.
Yeah, I mean, I think he said that, right? You know, in the last earnings call, he said he thinks that the biggest customer base for Tesla Energy is going to be Tesla vehicle owner, basically.
It makes sense.
You already have all the information too and everything, so I mean,
right. You've got logistics, you've got energy usage, you've got, you've got you've got a reason to put an inverter in the house, the backup power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're also trying to combine the Powerwall cells too with the solar energy. So they're very emphasizing installing Powerwalls with every solar installation that they have out there. So they're like the perfect customer for Tesla. I mean, it's someone that has at least one of their cars that have Tesla solar panel on their rooftop, and they have a power wall, and they have maybe like even a wall connector, so you can have easily like four Tesla product.
Yep. And theoretically, there's going to be more vertical integration there, so that maybe they have a charger that's connected right into the inverter, or so it doesn't have to go AC DC.
Yeah, I think there was a mention of that too recently about all the hardware that come aside from the actual like power wall and the actual like solar inverter, all the other commanding hardware that comes with the power wall and solar installation. I think they want to do that themselves, because right now they buy those, right?
Right.
So like, what's your solar inverter you have? Like,
Solar Edge.
Come again?
Solar Edge.
Yeah, that's a popular one, right? That Tesla is using.
Yeah, I think that's the best by far. Mm-hmm. There's some other ones, but Solar Edge kind of works with Tesla really well. Same. They operate at the same 400 volts. They, but I don't know how that's going to go long term. Like Tesla obviously knows how to make inverters, so
yeah. So they're more likely going to be a competitor than a partner, really, long term. You think?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, we're going to end on the fun note here. An electric Mustang. not just any Mustang, 1960s Mustang. What is the company called? Charge. Charge. They are the sister company of Arrival. We reported on Arrival a while back because they are doing some delivery trucks for the Royal Mail in Europe and in the UK. I mean, and
yeah, it's interesting that they're UK based.
Yeah, because it's a Mustang, you mean?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they are UK based, but I mean, the people that are working for the company are a bunch of engineers that came from like Williams and McLaren and Jaguar and all that stuff. So more like a British automotive background, but they partner for the electric powertrain with Arrival, which already developed their own powertrain for the delivery trucks that UPS and Royal Mail are using. They buy a bunch of chassis of a classic 1960 Mustang chassis from Ford, and they turn into the adapted a powertrain for it. Pretty decent powertrain for a conversion car. We're talking about a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack, a 200 kilowatt electric motor. I'm not completely sure on the electric motor thing because they're talking about a rear-wheel drive and an all-wheel drive configuration. They're talking about 300 total kilowatt output. So I don't know if it's like two motors, if that 300 kilowatts is for the two motors, if we're just one, I'm not sure.
Good question.
Yep.
No, it's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer. It wasn't clear. They released a teaser, basically, and they have a bunch of information that I just listed, including also 0 to 62 in 3.09 seconds, 7,500 of wheel torque, 1,200 of motor torque, and for the charging, they have a DC fast charging supporting 50 kilowatt charge rate. So a bunch of pretty decent spec, again, for an EV conversion. It's not like buying a new Tesla or something like that. But you're not buying a Tesla. You're buying a classic Ford Mustang. It's for the look. It's for the novelty of it. It's pretty cool. The range with that, because 60 kilowatt hour battery pack, it's pretty decent. I mean, it's bigger than a Bolt EV battery pack.
Same size.
Same size, 64?
It's not a 60? Oh, I thought you said 60. No, you're right. I think Bolt is 60, Kona is 64.
Yeah, right. They get 125 miles of range with that, which is, of course, not that much, but, I mean, it's a Ford Mustang. It's not really an efficient car. I mean, you just look at the picture right now, look at the grill of it. It's not made to be efficient, so you don't get that much range, but it's pretty decent for, like, a weekend drive kind of thing. I mean, I think the car looks just awesome. But the price is where things get more dicey. I mean, £200,000. Which amount to $260,000.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's insane, but it's like a limited product. They're doing like 500 of them or so. So I think it's going to sell them anyway.
Yeah, and I was just curious, like, why does Ford have 500 Mustang bodies laying around, 60s Mustang bodies? Like, they're buying them from Ford. Why does Ford have those?
I'm not sure how it works. Is it really 1960s Mustang, or do you just, like, the replica that they made? Because I know some automakers do that sometimes.
They make replicas of their older cars?
And we have a precedent for that, for the basically the same program, though the last time was directly from the automaker. You remember the Jaguar E-Type, when they did the prototype of the old E-Type, and now they're bringing them to production, actually. So very similar thing, though Jaguar did it themselves with partners, of course.
Yeah, and I guess Tesla's even updating their roadsters, their old roadsters, in a similar sort of way.
They were already electric, though, but
they're already electric, but they're
the same thing. It's also like, can you say that the old roadster is a classic, really? It's like a 2008 car.
It'll be a classic at some point.
Yeah, at some point for sure. Now we're talking about 1960s. The E-Type, when was the E-Type? The E-Type is, I think...
60s as well, I think.
The 60s?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, maybe, probably. Yeah, I think so. Maybe the 70s, but... Maybe the 60s. I think it's cool. I mean, I like to drive that car, but I'm not going to put £200,000 in there.
No.
But I think they have like test drives next year. So I mean, if they have one around here, I'm gonna go check it out for sure because it looks like a cool car. All right.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say it's an interesting world where, you know, they're upgrading classic cars. Maybe, you know, I've said this before, maybe like a Mazda Miata upgrade program would be kind of nice. It would be nice if, like, you could upgrade a typical ICE car to electric without too much expense. I don't know if that's realistic or not, though.
Yeah, conversion are expensive. I mean, I was talking to the guy that made the Honda S2000 at the drag strip a few weeks ago. And, I mean, they did a great job and everything, but I was like asking, like, if someone were to ask you, I want the same thing. I have an S2000, and I want you guys to do the conversion. And they already did one, so they have, like, some experience with it and everything. And I said, like, how much do you think that was going to cost? I mean, it was like, with all the parts and everything and the labor, it's not like it's on the production line and everything. The labor is like hundreds and hundreds of hours. So like it's going to be like $100,000. So it's definitely expensive. But I get what you're saying about the Miata, though. I just think that someone should... It's going to be more about... Not an EV conversion, sorry. Someone's going to make, from the ground up, an electric car that's going to be in the same class as the Mazda Miata. I think that's the most likely thing that's going to happen. And I think it's going to be very successful. The only one that I have on my radar right now is the Tofino from Electrica Mechanica.
But is that a three-wheeler?
No, it's a four-wheel. It's really like a small convertible. And I think they are aiming for like $40,000. So it's still a lot more expensive than the Miata. But then you have the gas saving and maybe even some incentive. So I don't know. We'll see. But that's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching from YouTube. Please like and subscribe if you like the show. And we're going to be back at the same time next week. Have a good one.